across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, I hope that so far 2020 is being kind to you. Don't forget, as ever, keep your emails and communications coming. You can go to my website, theunexplained.tv, which will have been in existence for how many years this year? 14 years in 2020. In just a few months from now, it will have been there. Run by Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. Thank you for all that you do, Adam. If you want to make contact with me, please do. And thank you for all of the communications. And if you've made a donation through the website, theunexplained.tv, to the show, thank you very much indeed. Your donation's vital to keep me going through 2020, which we are hoping to be able to do. You know, whatever transpires this year, we're going to be steaming through, as they say, on The Unexplained, as we have been for all of those 16 years, where I've been learning little by little, bit by bit. Now, the subject and the guest on this edition of The Unexplained is angel numbers and angels. Topic we've talked about before. I think you're going to like the person that we have on here. He's been very successful in America, has had a hugely successful book published by Hay House in the UK and the US. Massively successful in America. His name, Kyle Gray. The book that we're going to be talking about and around is Angel Numbers, The Message and Meaning Behind 1111 and Other Numbered Sequences. Loads of people seeing, I do, all the time, 1111. And, you know, I personally think it can't be, it can't just be random, can it? So, from the age of four, we're told, Kyle Gray has been blessed by the presence of angels who stood alongside him as he developed his talents to begin his spiritual work. This is in the biography that I've been sent. So he was developing his spiritual work from the age of 16. He's now 31 and internationally revered, it says here, as one of the world's strongest angel communicators. So we're going to cross to Glasgow, Scotland, to Kyle Gray. Conversation that you are going to hear now was recorded at the very end of 2019, just before we stepped across into that remarkable number. Well, I think it is. We'll find out. 2020. So Kyle Gray on this edition of the show. Don't forget, when you get in touch with me, as I say, please tell me who you are, where you are, and how you use this show. If you have a guest suggestion, let me have that, and any thoughts on the show, as ever, massively welcome. Okay, let's get to Glasgow. Kyle Gray is there. Kyle, thank you very much for coming on my show.
Thank you so much for having me. It is a pleasure to be here.
Well, a pleasure to have you on too. Tell from the accent, you're Scottish, and I know that you're in Scotland somewhere. Whereabouts are you?
So I'm in Glasgow city centre. I'm from the west coast, so about 45 minutes away originally, but I have been living in the city for the last few years.
Okay, and now, you know, Glasgow, and for my listener, we're going to get into the conversation. I know you say that we don't want chit-chat, we want the good stuff. But we've got to say that Glasgow, if you haven't visited Glasgow, you've got to, because in the last 30 years, 25 years or so, you know, like my own home city, Liverpool, Glasgow's been reborn.
Completely. I mean, I've always had such a love affair with Glasgow, but the feeling and the warmth and the connection to the city and my love for it has grown over the years. And every time I get the opportunity to come home, it feels so good. So every day when I walk through the city, I actually say, I love you, Glasgow. It's one of my daily affirmations.
Could almost be a marketing slogan. And we have to explain to my listener, if there's a slight degree of reverberation that you can hear, it's not very much. It's because you were telling me before we started recording this that you've got, in that apartment that you're in, your ceilings are 17 feet high.
They are indeed, yeah. I've got a loft conversion, so huge, gigantic ceiling and windows.
And a big redstone building, I bet.
It is a big redstone building.
Look at that. That's a psychic in me, not really.
Psychic.
Just know these things. All right then, Kyle, talk to me a bit about you. You've got a great website, talks about all the stuff that you do, and you know it's a cool website that puts across a really good image of you, I think. And I've looked at lots of websites, and I run a website myself, so I might know a bit about these things, not much. Talk to me about you and what you do, what you are.
So I call myself an angel expert, and it sounds super fancy, but it really is, because for the last 16 years of my life, I've spent all of my time really studying not just angels through spiritual texts, but also the experience of them. And it's been an incredible 16 years of learning, really about these divine beings that I believe are with us in every given moment.
Right. Now, anytime I talk to somebody who believes in angels or unicorns, or more recently, Karen Kay, who was on my radio show talking about fairies, I get people who say, this is bunkum. Such things don't exist, and there is no way that you can prove they do.
You know, I think that's completely fair. And one of the things I think is really important to say, that whenever you have a faith in something, it doesn't matter what it is, it's a personal choice. And if someone chooses not to believe, then I'm completely okay with that. But I also like to say this little thing, that maybe if you open up to it, you might experience something, you know. And it's, but again, it's not something I like to force down people's, you know, throats, or force them into believing something that doesn't feel comfortable for them.
And look, one of the things that I know about anything to do with things that you might call psychic or beyond the norm, and some of the stuff that I personally, and look, I'm a journalist. I'm, you know, we're supposed to be hard-nosed people who don't believe in this stuff, but I've had experiences my lifelong that show to me that what you see and what you feel and smell and touch is not all there is. So you're preaching to the converted in a way, but if you close yourself off to it, if you don't know, want to know what it is, it isn't going to come to you.
You know, one of the things that I've come to understand is that often people reject the idea of angels because maybe some of the religious connotations that are connected with the actual word angel, or the belief in angel, angels. But one of the things that I'll say is, for me, angels, although are connected to many of the world's spiritual traditions, it's a non-religious thing. It's more of a personal spiritual experience. And one thing I've really come to understand is that often people reject that idea because maybe they're not ready to be loved in that way.
Now, that's an interesting thing to say. When you say they're not ready to be loved in that way, what do you mean?
I really believe that these divine beings have this incredible love for us. And it's a love that is love that is love. It's a presence and a complete acceptance of who we are. And it doesn't matter who you are or what you've been through or the ups and downs of your life. It's this presence that will always cherish you for who you are. And I think a lot of people have these shields and barriers up to love because maybe they're not ready to be that vulnerable, or maybe they've never experienced love in a way. And so for me, a spiritual love is indescribable, and I'll try and describe it, but it's indescribable.
Okay. Well, you know, as we go through this conversation, we will try and describe it together. So how are you so sure that such things exist? They must, if you think they exist, they must have made some kind of appearance on some level to you at some life-changing point.
Yeah. I've had quite a lot of incredible experiences through my life, but it really did begin when I was much younger. I had Guillain-Barré syndrome when I was a child, and I don't know if you know about it, but Guillain-Barré syndrome is an autoimmune virus that generally is linked with the flu, and then it leaves you paralyzed. And I spent about 7 months of my, you know, childhood in a wheelchair. And going through that experience of Guillain-Barré syndrome, I had this heightened sensitivity. I was, you know, very much aware of a lot of the things that were going on around me.
Okay, now some people might say, and that's an awful thing to go through as a kid. I mean, right. It's remarkable that you've come out of it the way that you have, but, you know, bad thing to go through. What that does for some people, though, is it turns them in on themselves, worlds within themselves. And you're saying that it connected you with outside.
Well, you know, so one of the things I've always said is that the connection to the spiritual realm is not a connection that's out with, but within. You know, I like to look at the idea of physics that, you know, we are connected to the whole entire universe, like on the inside. And I really like to think that our connection to the angelic and the spiritual is also on the inside. So even if it did send me worlds within, I think that's really where the spiritual connection began. But it was actually more through my experience of my grandmother. Like, we connected so strongly. She had lymphoma cancer, lived in the same household, both in wheelchairs. And my grandmother and I would form this really incredible bond where my mum would put me in my grandmother's lap, put a blanket over us, and then we would, you know, roll out together. And it was the week school was starting. I had overcome Guillain-Barré syndrome. School was starting, and my parents were with my grandmother at the hospital. And I remember a neighbor, Margaret, put me to bed, and I, you know, fell asleep. And I remember waking up through the night and the light was off, but my grandmother came into my room and she sat at the bottom of my bed and she did my favorite thing. She tickled my back. And it was the next day. I went to, you know, my mum, and I was like, where's Nana? She came home last night. And she said, what do you mean she came home? I said, you know, she came into my room last night and tickled my back. And my mum then later revealed to me that day that she had went to heaven, as she said to me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So do you think
that
she came to you then? Sorry, you think that she came to you then, as, you know, sometimes happens, whether it's in a dream or whether it's more physically, right, to say goodbye?
Yeah, exactly. And I, even back then, I look back at that time of my life and I couldn't fathom, you know, how did I see her if she had went to heaven? Because I was a Sunday school boy, you know, and I went to Boys Brigade and Sunday school my whole life. And I had always been told that when someone goes to heaven, you never see them again until you return there. So I had this big question, like, why did I see her? And it was something that really kind of haunted me through, forgive the pun, but it haunted me through my life, where I was like constantly asking, you know, why did that happen?
So that was the catalyst.
That was the catalyst. And all through my childhood, I had this reoccurring migraine. They thought it was an after effect of having Guillain-Barré syndrome. Every single day I woke up with this like ringing in my head, a real sore head. And, you know, like, was on painkillers all through my childhood. And there was lots of different experiments done, you know, take him off this, take him off that. And I remember my mum explaining to the doctor, he's really hyper, he feels a lot, he's quite an emotional child. And the doctor was like, take him off E numbers, that's the answer. And, you know, child of that time. And my mum takes me off, you know, all the good stuff, like Smarties and Skips and all that kind of stuff. And I got even more sensitive and even more hyper, so they put me back on E numbers. And
with you, that's rare. The E numbers were actually calming you down rather than hyping you up.
Right, and that's one of the things that I've later found out, is a lot of people who are interested in spirituality, they think when you clean up your diet, often your spiritual connection gets clearer. You know, I've still got some habits now. I love chocolate and stuff, but it was just interesting, you know, that when they took me off it all, I actually got even more hyper, so they put me back on it.
And you're absolutely sure that whatever all of this experience opened up for you was not just a result of having been through that terrible illness that incapacitated you, having lost somebody to whom you were so close? And, you know, the mind is an amazing thing. We're still discovering many things about it. It is, you know, it's as mysterious as the depths of the ocean floor. So are you absolutely sure that whatever it is you think that you're connecting to is not just something that you've made?
I mean, definitely sure, but still, you know, it's okay for people to question that, because this is a personal choice, really. But it was more when I got to the teenage years when I really started to embrace spirituality and take a deeper dive with it. And Louise Hay, the creator of my publisher, speaks about this thing called a demonstration. And it's when you have an opportunity to really have the power of the universe demonstrated to you. And I believe I had mine when I got to about my teenage years. I had been a great fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer as a teenager.
Yes.
And it really opened me up to the idea of magic and crystals and people using tarot cards and all this kind of stuff. And I remember being in Sunday school one weekend, and I'd been talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and my Sunday school leader had said to me, Kyle, you know, it's God or Buffy? And I was like, well, I chose Buffy. And I had left Sunday school because of that conflict. And a family friend had said to me, Kyle, I know you're interested in crystals and magic and Wicca and all these things. Have you ever considered the idea of angels? And I was like, well, they feel a bit Christian for me, but what do you mean? And she said, why don't you come upstairs and pick an angel card with me. And we did that. And she lived in Thames Ditton in London. I was down visiting.
It's just down the road from me. Okay.
Down the road from you. That's what I was thinking. And yeah, picked an angel card. And the first card I picked was the word synchronicity. And, you know, I didn't even know what it meant. So I Googled it. And, you know, it really just represented a synchronistic event, something happening in a perfect time-space sequence. And I started to become interested in angels through that. And I learned that if you wanted help from an angel, you had to ask them first. And so my first thing I asked for was for them to heal my headache. And my 11-year-old migraine disappeared after that first prayer. And that was my demonstration, as I call it.
And you're sure that you did, I don't know if you had yourself checked out by a doctor, but you're sure that it wasn't just, you know, they say mind over matter is an amazing thing. And, you know, sometimes people have psychosomatic illnesses. I'm not suggesting that that was, but, you know, sometimes I know from my own experience, because I've had them, that, you know, through stress and pressure or whatever, I've created things for myself. And when I've willed myself out of them, they've gone away.
You know, I think that that works hand in hand with the angel ology and angel ideas, you know, like mind over matter, the power of the mind and the power of prayer. I think there's a real thin line between all of those things. So I'm really open to the interpretation of that. You know, if you would rather call angels the highest form of intelligence within, then I'm okay with that. For me, it feels comforting to know there's a presence with me. But, you know, beyond time and space, and also beyond this human idea of angels, for me it just feels like divine intelligence. So
I suppose the test is if you call for something that is without yourself, maybe somebody else to do something that you would like them to do, maybe to help you, I don't know, with your career, whatever it might be, something practical, that it isn't something that you could create by, you know, possibly healing yourself or whatever. That's a kind of proof that you're connecting to something. There may be a universal consciousness or something.
And it's all, for me, it's all just love anyway, you know, so it doesn't matter what you call it. It's all coming from the same source. And yeah, so that was my initial, you know, my experience that then led me down the path to starting to then experience more.
Okay, like what?
So I got over after that initial experience, I was really wowed by the idea that maybe I had had this migraine healed. And I then started to study all these different books about angels and learn angel cards, and all really took a real shift when I got to about 15 years old and I had started to learn how to do angel cards. And I was at a family friend's barbecue. My mum had said, why don't you bring your angel cards? You can practice on people. And, you know, she just thought it was fun and it was a hobby and just kind of a lighthearted thing.
We have to tell our listener what angel cards are, though. Well, how are they different from, say, tarot cards?
Tarot cards are like a systematic, it's like a system of cards that are in order and have so many. But angel cards are open to the creator's interpretation. So in traditional ideas now, in the last, you know, 15 to 20 years, angel cards are an oracle deck with keywords inside of them. There's usually about 44 to 45 angel cards in a deck. And the cards have like a keyword, an inspirational word on it. And then it's open to interpretation. So basically that's it.
Okay.
And you pick so many to do a reading. So I had learned how to do angel cards, and I was getting pretty good, you know, accurate messages coming through. And yeah, but I was just interpreting the cards, you know, this card means that and that card means that. So I had went to this family friend's barbecue, and there was my mum's friend's best friend was there with his partner. And both these men were interested in having an angel card reading, and I practiced, you know, doing it for them. So I did one and he thought it was pretty good. And then the second one was the experience that kind of changed my life. I was, you know, putting the cards out on the picnic bench in the garden. It was, you know, around 7 o'clock on a summer's night. And I remember just inviting him to place his hands on top of the cards and just think about anything he would like guidance on, is what I used to say. And I just said, you know, angels, you know, thank you for helping me give an accurate reading here. And then something strange happened. I heard this music playing in my head, and it was Destiny's Child Survivor. And I mean, it's such a random song choice. And I could hear it. And I was like, I can hear Destiny's Child Survivor. Can you? And he's like, no, what are you talking about? You know, and I was like, I can hear Destiny's Child Survivor playing in my mind. And the song just goes, I'm a survivor. So I could hear this. And I was like, okay, that's really strange. I feel like there's a message in this for you. And I said this really simple prayer in my mind. I said, if there is an angel here, thank you for revealing your presence. And that's when time shifted. It was like I was frozen in the chair, and coming towards me, and my eyes open, was this pinpoint of light. And it was moving so fast, but yet so slow. And then all of a sudden, there was like this gigantic being of light standing at the side of the guy. And then I just heard this real clear message. And the angel was interesting because it looked like the movie Cocoon. You know, if you've ever seen that movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like this being made of light.
I would have thought you're too young for that one. I remember that movie.
Yeah, I remember watching it years ago. I've got a really crazy memory. And all I heard was in my mind, tell this man he is a survivor. So I just said, there's an angel standing behind you right now, very matter of fact, and it wants you to know that you're a survivor. And he said, what do you mean I'm a survivor? And I just said, without thinking, it feels like you've tried to leave this planet and something is keeping you here. And he flipped out. He's like, this is too much. That was too close to the bone, was his words. And he left. And later on, and in that moment, like the angel vanished, it all just came back to normal. And my mom was like, what happened there? I was like, I'll tell you later. And it turns out later on that night, you know, everyone found out about it, that he'd actually tried to take his own life several times, this man. And every time he, you know, tried to do so, something had went wrong. And and I obviously clearly got some sort of message about it.
And he'd given you no indication that he was around you because he had some kind of issue?
No, because I was just at a family friend's barbecue. I was reading.
So you wouldn't have known that?
No, it was like, you know, I was 15 years old, never even met this couple before in my life. And I'd been doing readings on everyone at the party. So it wasn't like, you know, it was just one of those, it was like, I always think it wasn't a fluke, but it was just like a synchronistic thing. It happened to happen out that way.
Can I ask you a little favor? I know that you're using, because we talked about this before, there's a microphone that people who do podcasts and stuff called the Blue Yeti. You've got one of those, you're using it, they're excellent. They have a stand that transmits vibrations from desks or anything that they're put on. So they sound fabulous, but that stand, if you knock the desk or bump it with your knee or anything, or touch it with your hand, it's going to go bump, bump, bump. It's very, very slight, but just, you know.
It's me, I just wave my hands a lot when
so
I'm
do
speaking,
I,
so it's probably that.
I do exactly the same thing, but I've got this sort of boom thing for my microphone, so I can, you know, I can wave my arms around like a windmill. But, you know, the Yeti's a great mic. I've got one of those myself for USB stuff, but that's another topic for my podcasting and recording friends. Sometimes people say, can you tell me how you do your podcast and what equipment you use. It's very peculiar. Anyway, by the by. So you were growing to think that there was something else there. And look, I'm not going to knock this. I know some of my listeners will, and, you know, some of my listeners will be amazed by all this. Some of them will say, rubbish. But I know that when I did those Karen Kay cards a couple of weeks ago, I just tried them out when I was doing the interview, and I thought, okay, let's give this a go. You know, and they're a little bit like angel cards, but they're painted in a, you know, in a different way, the pictures and the words on them, but very similar. Yeah. So I shuffled and picked out three cards, and the three cards made a coherent sentence that actually made sense to me. And I thought, well, that's interesting. But then I've had weird synchronicities and stuff happen to me all of my life that I've just kind of shrugged my shoulders and gone, oh, yeah, I know, you know, there's something there. So I don't knock it at all. So after this thing, then, you're 15, you're at a family gathering, you're doing readings for people with the cards. What happens then?
So then, obviously, the party came to an end and we found out that information later on that night. And then, because you live in a small town, word spreads like wildfire. And overnight, just my mother's phone started going, is your son the boy who can see angels? And people had started just calling our house phone because, you know, mobile phones weren't really as big as they are now. And yeah, people just kept phoning, can I see your son? I'd like to learn about my angels. And people were, you know, very matter of fact about it. So I started to practice doing it more and more. And I started going to, for a while, a local spiritualist church, but angels weren't really part of the conversation there. They were more like interested in channeling messages from deceased people. So I kind of danced around and tried to find my way, and I ended up walking out of high school at 15, and best worst decision ever. And I ended up getting a job in a hairdresser's, just sweeping up hair, just to, you know, get things by, and then continued to build up this practice, as I called it. And by the time I was 17, I received a Scottish government fund to help me start a business as an angel reader.
So they gave you money,
yeah,
a grant to do that. I mean, I know that I do know actually some people who work as psychics, I think, who've had some kind of assistance. So that's not unusual. It's going to surprise some people that you got some money to get you going.
Well, you know, the way it works in Scotland, I'm really grateful for that open-mindedness from Scottish Enterprise at the time, because, you know, I was doing something really different, but, you know, one of the things that they brought into consideration was the fact that I was doing something that could bring people together. And
that's always a good thing, isn't it? Now, you know, if you're a painter and decorator, or if you're an electrician, I think you probably have to demonstrate to, you know, whoever's doing grant funding like that, that you can do that. How do you demonstrate to a government agency that you talk to angels?
You know, one of the things I'll say to you is I think that it was my reputation. You know, it was really quick how people found out about me, Howard. It was like so many people were like, I really want to know more about this. I really want to hear. And of course, I received a lot of, you know, people gave me a hard time as well. Like, I'm not going to just say it was easy. Oh, yeah. People really came for me. And, you know, like,
how did they do that?
In nightclubs, people wanted to fight me and stuff. And, you know, you were like, who do you think you are, saying you can speak to angels, all these different things.
And I guess you get drunken people staggering up to you saying, hey, you say you can talk to anyone, then, you know, get me Elvis Presley.
Yeah, like people would be like, because I ended up working at the Sun newspaper for 5 years, and I was called the Angel Whisperer. Okay. And people used to come up to me and whisper. So it's just, you know, like I did receive quite a lot of flack about it. And what I have to say, just to touch on that, is that, I don't feel bad about it. It's definitely a personal decision to do this work. And a lot of people have since come up to me and apologized, you know, and especially my hometown. People are like, I really didn't think you were real, but, you know, you've been doing this for so long now. Like, it's incredible.
I tell you what, though, it is amazing how people change their view of you when you start getting famous.
Yeah, that is a thing. And you know, I was starting to do well, and people were like, it's amazing what you've done for yourself. And a lot of people had heard about, you know, charitable things I'd done. And I'd also, like, you know, got my mum in a really good place. And, you know, my business obviously started to grow to a point where I've got employees and stuff. So it was like, really, a lot of people started to change the way they felt about me. And also could see that there was a reputation that had built itself up for the last, you know, nearly 16 years.
So did, you know, TV invitation, you were writing for the Scottish, was it the Scottish Sun you were writing for?
Yeah, I wrote for the Scottish Sun for 5 years.
Right, so you're doing this kind of stuff, so people will be getting to know you through the media.
Yeah, 5 years, it was amazing.
So were you starting to do television and things like that?
I did a couple of television shows when my first book came out, did like This Morning, and I also worked on a Soap Star Superstar, which was like a, you know, X Factor for celebrities.
Quite a big show in its time, yeah.
Yeah, so I had been doing like readings and ideas, reading people's angels on that show and stuff. And it was really funny because every time I've done something like that, I've always got too emotional and they're like, this is not entertaining enough. And that was something I really tried to find my way with, because people are like, it needs to be entertaining. I'm like, my work's not entertainment, no.
Well, you know, you can't, the entertainment comes from what you do. You can't fake it up.
Right. And so I ended up, I remember being on that TV show, Soap Star Superstar, and I was to pick, you know, a celebrity to work with. And the person I honed in on, I had no idea. It's nothing I was ever interested in. No offense. It's, you know, it's just, it was never for me. And it turns out they'd went through, like, they just had a miscarriage or something like that. And it was really under wraps and no one had known. And I was like, there's a child's energy around this person. And they ended up not allowing it to be televised because it was such an emotional experience. We're talking again over 15 years ago. So I don't even, it was never televised. It was, I don't think it was even.
Sounds to me like, okay, the whole celeb thing then is not really you. I can tell that just by what you're saying.
Yeah, the celeb things, you know, there's a lot of people, celebrities that have given me endorsement and support and also really like my work, and I'm really grateful for that. But I've never really wanted to, you know, cash in on that. It just feels, you know, I just like to treat everyone as equals. And I like.
Have you got any celebrity stories that you're allowed to tell me?
I don't know. Oh, I've got a really cool one about a politician.
Okay. And you'd be allowed to tell this one. Have you told this one before?
What party or anything, but it was basically a politician had come to see me, a member of parliament, and they liked what I'd said to them, but they didn't know if I, you know, was legit or it was all, they thought it was really interesting. And I said, well, why don't you ask for a sign to prove this is real to you? And we said a little prayer, and he went to get his suit dry cleaned, and he got it back from the cleaners, and he was putting it on for some speaking engagement, and he went into the pocket and he found a gigantic white feather, like a huge he had no idea how a feather found its way into his left hand pocket of his suit jacket. And I'll never forget, he actually texted me about it. It was really funny.
Well, that's quite, I mean, you know, MPs, you tend to think are quite hard-nosed people. So it's quite nice to think that this particular person who we, you know, we won't name was, you know, is quite open-minded about these things.
You'd be surprised, the people that get in touch.
All right.
It's quite fascinating.
For the rest of us who are not MPs and we're not famous, can you think of any stories where you've given people a narrative from what you've done for them, or, you know, ways that you've been able to help them?
It was a really good one. It made the newspaper, so it's like public and, you know, we don't need to worry about it coming out. So there's a really good story I can tell you about this one, because it ended up in the newspaper. And I had been building up my clientele, had then, you know, started writing at The Sun. I had this column called The Angel Whisperer, and this woman had got in touch with me, and she really wanted to do a private session. And at the time, I was renting an office, an Easy Office. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
I have.
You know, EasyJet had opened these cheap offices you could rent by the hour. So I started seeing clients in there. And this one woman came to me. It was like a wet winter's night. I remember it because the Christmas lights were being turned on, and I was doing this reading for her, and I could feel her angels, and I was speaking about the information that was coming through. And the angels in my mind told me that her mother was here. So I was like, I feel like your mother's coming through. She's with your angels. And then the angels then said, speak about her two sisters. So I said, I have to speak about your two sisters. And she said, I've only got one sister. And I said, oh, I've just been told you've got two sisters. And so all this information started coming through, and I was like, this is so strange, but it feels like there's two. And she said, it's really weird that you say that, because my sister who lives in Canada recently went to see some other intuitive person, and they also mentioned a similar message. And I said, okay, I'm going to ask for more information. I'm going to write down everything I've got. You can go look into it, and then you can come back to me. So I had ended up writing down this full name of a person on a bit of paper. I had wrote down Coney Island, New York. I had wrote down all these different things, dates, names, all this stuff that came to.
Coney Island, New York is a bit specific, isn't it?
It's really specific. So the woman was like, okay, that was really interesting. I then told her other things about her life that she really enjoyed, and she went away. And then people kept phoning up and saying, are you the guy who got the sisters in touch with each other? And I was like, sorry? And like, my friend came to see someone who speaks to angels and he put their sisters in touch with each other. And anyway, so I ended up managing to find the woman's phone number and we called her up. And it turns out that what had happened was I had said all this stuff to her and the name that I had wrote on the bit of paper was the nurse who delivered another sister. And her mother was told that her sister was dead on arrival, but that it was untrue. And her sister was sold on the black market.
On the black market?
Yeah, to a family in Coney Island, New York.
Wow. How did you put that jigsaw of information? I mean, that's mind-blowing.
For me, it was completely innocent. I just wrote down some information and then left it with her.
So what happened then?
Well, they managed to track down their sister and find her. And she had, it was so weird because it went three ways. The sister who lived in, you know, New York had felt like she didn't belong in her family. She then found out that she'd been adopted and they couldn't really tell her information about her adoption. So she had went to see like a psychic in New York. And the psychic in New York said, there's two women looking for you. And that her birth mother was coming through. And this is really what happened. So it got out there that, you know, newspapers had, I think the Sun covered the whole story and wrote about a big spiel about it back then. And then my bookings had booked out for like 2 months, 2 years in advance.
But once people heard that story, so literally, if I've got all of those details right, there would have been no way that those people could have got together or found out the truth about themselves, if I've got this right, without you.
It was really weird. All these pieces of information were just like, you know, they were specific, but I just trusted it. And I didn't even know Coney Island, New York was even a thing. You know, I remember hearing about Coney Island from like a movie or something, but I don't even know how I had pieced that all together. But what was really interesting for me was the actual writing out the full name of the person that delivered her sister. I thought, you know, how specific can you get? So I was really spooked out myself.
So the person who was in front of you would not have known about Coney Island.
They didn't even know they had a sister at this point, and I'm telling her she does. And
so how was the connection ultimately made? Was it made through that specific name?
Yeah, it was through the specific name, and they went back to, you know, the birth certificate place, and they did all this searching, and that's when they started to find out that their mother had actually given birth to another child that she didn't tell her family about growing up because the child had obviously, in her eyes, died. But had actually been sold on the black market.
So the mother wasn't aware that the other child was alive, is that right?
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. So
we just had to explain that very clearly. That is an astonishing story.
It's insane. Like, you know, I think that's probably the most spookiest thing I've ever... No, that's not true.
If all the details are as you say they are, it is one of the most evidential things that I've ever heard.
Yeah, you know, and the funniest thing is, I don't think it's something I could ever do again. You know, it was just like, I really believe that their mother was working so hard to try and get messages to them all, you know, to tell them about this truth.
But how was it possible, if you know, to make the connection between that name that you were given and the events that transpired and the connection with Coney Island? I mean, somebody did the digging there.
I know it's pretty insane. Like we kept in touch for a while, you know, about it. But
who did the investigation? Who did the finding?
Oh, the sisters. The sisters went to the I don't know. Is there a place you go and it's like certificates, like marriages, births, and deaths, or something like that?
Well, I mean, there is in any country. I mean, we used to have, when I was a little boy, there was a place called Somerset House where everybody was registered. But yeah, the government has a place where you can check every birth.
Yeah, so that was the initial, you know, steps, and then they started to dig and dig and dig.
So this other sister was a registered birth, the mother did not know that second child was alive and hadn't seen the register, hadn't seen the registered birth certificate?
it was back in the, you know, the 50s. So, like, when a child... So
a lot of stuff happened then, yeah.
You know, like, you know, when someone had passed away back then, supposedly you didn't see the baby. You know, you weren't shown your child again.
No, they didn't understand that, you know, you have to give the mother that experience. I understand all of that. Yeah. Boy, and, you know, these were not as enlightened times as we live in now. Thank the Lord.
I know. It's so crazy that all of that happened. And I was amazed about it, but I really didn't know anything had happened until, you know, it started to come back to me from other sources, like this had happened. And this woman, whether she liked it or not, like, was like my PR person, because she told absolutely everybody about this incredible story. And then, of course, the newspaper got wind of it.
Well, boy, that's a hell of a story. Your publisher's going to be very upset if we don't talk about your book, Angel Numbers. And I've got a nice clean copy of the book here. Now, numbers, a lot of people are very transfixed by the idea of numbers. And there's this thing that happens to me, but happens to millions of people, and people who email me tell me about this, where numbers are important to them. They sometimes see, and I see, the numbers 1111. You know, all the time I'm seeing 1111, and I don't think it's mind over matter. I think somebody's trying to draw my attention to something because it's just too weird for words. So is that the sort of thing, when you talk about angel numbers, that you're talking about here in this book?
Yeah, 1111 is the ultimate angel number, and it's an age-old message that is being shared in a new way. And, you know, it's a message that we've all heard many times, that we are all one. And when you're seeing 1111 arrive up on a clock repetitively, it's the universe reminding you that you are connected to and part of the incredible oneness of this universe.
And why do they have to do that in such a cryptic way?
Well, I think that, you know, I really believe that the other dimensions and the universe is as loud as our willingness to listen. And so many of us don't even listen to ourselves. So how the heck are we going to be able to listen to an angel? And so I think they've started to find new ways to get in touch. And I think, you know, omens and signs have always been something that have been regarded and respected throughout, you know, the centuries. And it's been in different ways, you know, in certain places, in certain belief systems, like seeing certain things in nature or finding certain things in nature all meant something. And I think that now the universe and the angels are seeing us look into digital screens all the time. They've tried to get in touch in a digital means.
Okay, I'll tell you my number story then that changed my life. How about that? And you can talk to me about this. And I've actually got the relevant page open. Now, my career in broadcasting, and I'm very grateful to this radio company because they gave me everything. Radio City in Liverpool, big, big radio station still today. I was at university, I was studying, and I stayed in Liverpool. I went to Liverpool University, and, you know, I'm very glad that I did, so that I could try and be around the radio stations in my home city. But there was a day when I'd auditioned for the BBC in Liverpool, and I've never really been a BBC person. I've worked for them five times in my career, but I'm a commercial radio dude. That's always been me. But I'd auditioned for the BBC, and, you know, I was very young, and I knew I wasn't going to get a job there. So this is the sequence of events. I'm sitting there in my parents' front room. It's a cold January day, and I've got a digital watch, and I'm just spinning numbers on the digital watch, you know, which is something I used to do. And I swear on this day, the first day I did it, I was just sitting there by the phone, and I spin the numbers, and they ended up at 194. Now, you know that back in the day, Radio Clyde, where you are, used to be 261, okay? Long time ago. Radio City was 194. About 3 seconds after those numbers came up, the phone went. And the man, and I swear this is a true story, the man on the other end of the phone was a guy called Roger Wilkes, a fantastic journalist, very tough, but a decent guy, who was the news editor of Radio City, the commercial station. Roger said, "Is that Howard Hughes? I hear you have a voice." And I was so shocked, I said, "Oh, yes, I do." And he said, the boss of the BBC in Liverpool, a guy called Roy Corlett, who was the boss of Radio Merseyside.
Of course, yeah.
Roy Corlett gave me your phone number, and Roy said, "He's not one of ours, but he's going to be one of yours." And that's a true story. Now, I've got the page 75 here, that talks about various numbers and their significance. And the numbers 194 are, and that number's recurred in my life because I ended up working for Capital Radio in London, which years before I arrived there, used to be on 194. It was Capital 194 back in the 80s, as they say. But that was before my time at Capital. So 194 has always been sort of significant. 194, angels want you to know that you have an opportunity to increase your sense of purpose. Be open to new ideas. That's 194, a number that's, you know, that's been very important in my life. But you do all the numbers. I mean, for example, the Chinese, and I am too, I have to say, I'm very big on the number 8. And you say that number 8 here, cycle or pattern, is being repeated now so that you understand the lesson. Take time to reflect. So why does every number have a meaning then?
For me, like, one of the things I'll say is, like, that's really cool hearing your story, because everyone I've met so far, and especially influential people, all have their own little numbers. And I'm really fascinated to hear, you know, what my message is in the book as to what they've experienced. So it's always pretty cool to hear that. So when I was doing this book, I really wanted to create a scale of information. I didn't want to just write, this is the meaning. And I wanted to tell people the why. And so when I was creating this book, I actually asked the angels in a meditation to give me information about the vibrational scale of each numbers, which I revealed in the book called The Codex on page 12. And each number all has its own little keyword behind it, or keywords behind it, or key intentions behind it. And then when you put more than one number together, all you need to do is put the three, you know, keywords together, and you'll get a final message, if that makes sense.
Okay, so you have not only individual numbers themselves, but you have combinations of numbers like 0808 or 0909.
Yeah, like the ones you see on the clock. And so, for example, I always use 101 as a great way to kind of break it down. So 101 in angel numbers. So one is the number of the self, oneness, the higher self, universal connection, because it's all about the one. And O has always been about new beginnings, doors opening, and also like God reality, like the creator. So if you think 101, if you put, it's like I, the self, oneness, connection, God in the middle, and then I, the self, oneness, connection. So like 101 is like, I am one with the power of God, or I am one with my creator at this time. So what did I put in the book? God is within, listening closely to all your prayers and intentions. So it's like the self being sandwiched between the creator. And so all of the number messages are basically my interpretation of putting the keywords of each number together. So like 194, you know, one is the number of oneness, the self, connection. Nine is the number of self-mastery, union to the higher self, which is also about purpose. And then four is about communication and expansion. So like 194, and then you get the message. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And just be careful about knocking that table, because you were doing, I could just, you know, we're not doing video, but I know that your hands were going all over the shop there. So I could hear it's like so how, you know my story then about that number that is important to me. So are you saying that everybody who thinks that they have a number that's significant in their life needs to get your book and look it up?
I mean, they don't have to. It would be helpful. No, I honestly believe that if everyone has a number, I think often that number can become in some way a token, a mascot, an ally, a reminder that there's something else out there keeping an eye on you and watching you. So if you see 194 reoccur in your life, it's a reminder to you from the universe about your gifts and your potential.
Well, and you're convinced then that everybody who has, as I do, maybe that significant number, and maybe there are a couple of others, if they've always thought all through my life, and you say that most people have that, I don't know whether that's so, my listener will tell me. If you think that you have significant numbers, then you need to get looking them up. But what practical use are these numbers in the book? Do they help you to invoke, to derive help in some way from what you say the angels?
So, you know, I think the number is the first thing, and but there's a three-step process I recommend people do when they experience an angel number. So the first thing is, whenever you see any sign, doesn't matter if it's a number or something else that you think significant, it's a message to you that you are not alone, And I think all of us in our lives at some point have experienced that feeling of aloneness. And it's like the universe reminding us that we're not alone. The second part is when you're seeing a sign, you're on the right path. So like when signs occur, it's because you're doing something right. You're on to something. And then the final step is calling help. And because you're not alone and because you're on the right path, you also have a great level of support available to you now. So it's about inviting that in.
Okay. So I'm just looking at the number of pages in this book. And there are 300 and, well, it's, you know, just shy of 310, let's say that. But, you know, how should people use this book? It's a collection of numbers and descriptions of what each one is.
You know, it's a reference book because there's so many, you know, like when I look up angel numbers, it's hashtagged 1.3 million times on Instagram. So people are experiencing this. So I just wanted to create like a reference guide for them to be able to check in on the number and get an opinion on what that message is.
Okay, number 462. I've just randomly opened the book at that. It says, you're being encouraged to cut the cords between you and relationships that are not supporting you or making you feel whole. That's one that I've just picked out randomly. Now, look, if I think about my life, then I can think of a number of ways, you know, that that may well be relevant. But then maybe anybody could.
But I think one of the things that I'll say to you is like whenever you just randomly open something, I think it's always important to check in with an intention first. You know, like I think you can just randomly do something, but if you do it with a little bit more intention, like I always like to say a little prayer, like thank you for revealing to me what I need to know. I always have found that the random opening of a page is always a bit more insightful.
Well, while you were talking, I was thinking, all right, I'm going to open this book and I'm going to do it with my eyes closed and I'm going to turn to a page and put my thumb on a part of the page and I want that to have some meaning to me. So that's what I did while you were talking. So I opened you the book at that page 462, number 462.
And so then when you get a message like that, it's really important to really take it on. Like that's one of the things I'll say is that if you're being guided to cut the cords, you need to really ask yourself, is there anything that is limiting my potential to grow?
You know, I've just done it again and I've got 702. And strangely enough, it says, God is helping you with your relationships. Know that there are opportunities for you to grow closer to your loved ones at this time. So that just may just be totally random. But I've just done that blind for two numbers in this book, a complete random, 462 and 702. And they were both about relationships.
All numbers end in two are all about relationships.
Okay. I mean, is there a kind of guide to that? You know, numbers that end in one are this, numbers that end in seven are this.
Yeah, that's what the key codex is at the start on page 12. Because if you can see the pattern in each number, it follows all the way through the book.
Okay. So what you're asking people who do this and buy the book to take a kind of leap of faith then and to do it on the, and a lot of things work this way, I find, to do it on the understanding that if you think it has some meaning to you, then it probably does.
Right. And I think that so many people go around their life searching for meaning, and I think life is filled with it. And taking these opportunities to kind of connect with wisdom and insight is just another way for us to be more aligned with information and intelligence that can guide us in our life. I really believe that we're all being guided. And if we're open to experiencing that guidance, it will be there to support us.
How are you being guided?
I mean, I experience a lot of positive things in my life. It's been a wonderful journey. And every single day, I always just say this little prayer every single day. I call the universe God. It's the same thing for me, but I always just say, this is not my work. This is God's work. Thank you for doing it through me. And, you know, amazing things happen. And like, I'll use this book as an example. Like I have just left this in the hands of the divine, but at the same time, I've put effort and energy into getting it out there. And, you know, I was like, the goal that Hay House US set was like, we want to get this on the Wall Street Journal. So I was just like, angels, thank you for bringing this to the Wall Street Journal if you feel that this is the best thing for it. And, you know, in its first week of publication, it went to the Wall Street Journal. So it was just like amazing things happen when you put intention behind them.
And how's your response? I mean, I have listeners, as you may have been told by the people who helped set this up, all over the world, and, you know, a following in America and Canada. You know, how's it going down there? Good, by the sounds of it.
The book sold more in the US than it has sold in anywhere. It was number one in its category, I think it still is, in its category in US and Canada. It hit the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. So, yeah, pretty good. Doing well.
Good. Well, I'm pleased to hear it. You're very enthusiastic and very optimistic by the sounds of it. You know, it's coming through this this digital connection. What are your plans for 2020?
2020 looks like a lot of travel. Again, this year I've been on about 70 flights, which is incredible. And again, I think next year is going to be lots of travel. The first speaking engagement of the year is in Germany. So, yeah, lots of great things happening.
Okay, is there anything in this conversation that we've covered quite a bit of stuff here, but is there anything that I haven't asked you or anything that you were wanting to talk about and you didn't get the chance to?
Well, I think because we are in this time where we're talking about numbers and 2020 is the next decade, I just wanted to share 2020 on Angel Numbers is the number that represents an opportunity to strengthen your connection with others. And it's a number that brings forgiveness and compassion. And I honestly believe that 2020 is going to give us lots of opportunity to bring forgiveness and connection back to our world. You know, because so many of us have probably experienced a lot of disconnection. You know, just look at the political climate and a lot of things.
Absolutely. I mean, we're recording this not too long after we had a general election that followed a couple of years or more of chaos connected with the referendum to do with leaving Europe, the European Union. And, you know, it created an awful lot of enmity between people, a lot of division, a lot of bad feeling. And I think a lot of people, as we stand at the end of 2019, because we're recording this at the very back end of 2019 to run at the very beginning of 2020, you know, a lot of us are looking for better times and better things. Did the number 2019 indicate what kind of year that was?
So in Angel Numbers, 2019 wasn't listed because basically it's like numbers that repeat themselves. So 2020 is more of a time. So I looked that up. But if you look at 20 as a number and then look at 19 as a number, you know, I'd be interested to see what I wrote about that. Because twos are about relationships, zeros are about connection to God, but 19 is about taking ownership of a current situation. So it's interesting, you know, that 2019 has been a place where no one really wants to take responsibility for their role.
Oh boy. All right. Anything else, as they say, as yet left unsaid?
No, I feel this is great. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. And I'm just, you know, just to explain to my listener again, there was a certain amount of not much reverberation in this. And that's because you're in this fab building in the very top part of it with a 17-foot, I'm trying, what's that in meters? That's 6-meter high ceiling above you. That's, yeah. That is amazing. I can only wish you, Kyle, all the very best in all you do. And, you know, you're a very enthusiastic speaker, and that goes an awful long way.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I am a 7 on the Enneagram, if you know what that means.
No, what's a 7 on the Enneagram?
The enthusiast, it's called. It's a personality type, so I'm number 7, which is funny. Yeah. Okay. So thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, and thank you very much for doing this, Kyle. Thank you. Take care.
Cheers.
Kyle Gray. Your thoughts on him and what he spoke about, very gratefully received. Go to my website right now or whenever you feel like. It's theunexplained.tv, and you can send me an email from there. And don't forget, if you can make a donation for this show while you're on the website, theunexplained.tv, please do so. More great guests in the pipeline here in 2020. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. And please, whatever you do, wherever you are, stay safe, stay calm, and above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.